What the Tech is brought to you by Keeps. Keeps makes easy and affordable hair loss treatment for men. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/Andrew. Rocket Loans, part of the Quicken Loans family of companies, offers personal loans from $2,000 to $35,000 by visiting rocketloans.com/whatthetech. That's rocketloans.com/whatthetech. Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. Visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. I'm glad that you're here with us today, and I'm glad that my tag team partner in life is also with me. With me, as always, the one, the only, Mr. Paul Theron. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. I'm excited to do the show with you today because there's so much to talk about. The Samsung announcement was yesterday, the Samsung Galaxy event. What do they call it? Unfold, right? Unfold?
Unpacked.
Unpacked. It should have been Unfold this year.
That's true.
Yeah.
But then that would have leaked something, and they don't want that.
Yeah, oh, God forbid. God forbid you leak it, considering that the information's been out for months. Yeah. I do want to go into, but really quick, 1 to 10, what would you rank the event?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I honestly, in this, compared to like an Apple event, an iPhone event, I think it was right up there. See, I wasn't prepared for this question, Andrew, because there's a lot of aspects to it. The quality of the presenters was not very high for the most part. But the products themselves, I mean, they're competitive. And, you know, the quality of the event itself was really high. I mean, that's obviously a big production value kind of a thing. I don't know, 8 maybe?
An 8, okay. Very.
I'm just talking about the event, right? Yeah. I mean, we can judge the devices.
The devices we'll talk about, obviously.
Yeah.
There is so much to talk about today about this. Obviously, I watched the event live. I was in meetings all day just like 5,000 meetings. And I was sitting at a restaurant, and I looked at the time. I'm like, oh, my God, it's 2 o'clock. There's an Apple event. And I was really caught off guard because you were doing Windows Weekly earlier yesterday.
Right.
You started at noon. And around 2 o'clock, like normally, like my alarm clock for events like this is you with your tweets.
Yeah.
And I didn't see any at 2 o'clock. So like I panicked at like 2:10 and I turned it on and already it had begun. They really started this thing off.
I never intended to live blog or live tweet this one. I was kind of legitimately interested in the event. Like I didn't want to miss something by making fun of stuff. Although there was plenty to make fun of for sure. It would have been an easy target, but
yeah, and one of the tweets I made actually went viral on Twitter, and it's gotten like thousands of likes. And I think the video I posted was the video of them unfolding it. It has like 40,000 views now. The video, which I was shocked because it was just like a really quick, stupid thing that I posted.
Yeah.
So I mean, that says something.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in it. I mean, in the folding phone in particular. I mean. We can get to this. There's a lot here, actually. You know, that device is clearly not ready. You know, it's just not ready.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing that I wrote yesterday in the wake of the Samsung event, which was not what I expected to be writing, by the way, in watching the event, I was kind of building this narrative in my head about what they were trying to accomplish. And my initial take on it was that it had less to do with the actual devices, although they're, you know, important in their own time frame, but rather in the broader Samsung strategy, and that their sense of leadership that they have in the smartphone industry, they are the biggest seller of smartphones, for example. And they have, for the past many years, have been first to market with many innovative features in phones, including the curved displays, most especially. They're very proud of their display technology, which they should be. But you know, as the event ended, and as I started writing this post, and then started really thinking about what had just happened, it occurred to me that this is kind of a weird thing to say because they are again the number one smartphone maker in the world, In fact, we just today got the IDC, I think it was IDC or Gartner, I can't remember which one, but we now have both IDC and Gartner numbers for the smartphone sales from last year and from last quarter, and sales fell year over year, which we suspected would happen. And Samsung and Apple both had experienced big drops. And I actually think Samsung is in trouble. I think that their positioning is a good one, and I think it has already ended, and they just don't realize it yet.
Oh, that's a really nice, that's interesting to think about, actually. I do want to talk about this, obviously, and a whole lot more, and yeah. I want to go into details about everything else that happened. But I do want to talk about our great sponsor, and that's Rocket Loan. You've heard me talk about this for a couple of weeks, and I've been getting amazing feedback from you guys because of the simplicity and the ease of getting pre-approved with these guys. Here's a great example. I brought it up last week. You know, holidays are rough on some people, especially me with two kids. Paul has two kids, and one in college and one on the way. So, bills pile up, bills happen, things happen, or you're purchasing a new house, furniture for your new house, or you're making, upgrades to your house. Like I just did. I wish I knew about Rocket Loan then when I did this, because it would have been a lot easier. Rocket Loan is part of a Quick Loans family of companies, offers personal loans from $2,000 to $35,000 by visiting rocketloans.com/whatthetech. You can check it out for yourself. You can check out your offers at any time without harming your credit. With Rocket Loan's simple, rocket-fast online process, you could combine all your credit cards into one single fixed monthly payment with no prepayment penalties and fixed rates. Rocket Loans is here to help you get your new year started right and continue it on throughout the year, which is great. Check them out at rocketloans.com/whatthetech. All loans are made by Cross River Bank, member FDIC. These guys are great, and I got a message from somebody that wanted to take out a small loan for new furniture on their new house, and he wrote this really nice letter saying that, you know, he hates the process of going and doing this, going to a bank and going through the process. It's a total pain in the butt, and he goes, you know, I don't know why I didn't do it until I saw you guys talk about it, and I went immediately, and I did this, and he got pre-approved immediately within seconds, and there you go. He was all set. So rocketloans.com/whatthetech. I want to thank them for supporting the show. I want to go into the Galaxy Fold first, because you know, we do these Apple events every single year. You join me. I used to do it for years, where I used to do a live broadcast during the event and do commentary. You join me a bunch of times. I used to do it with Suncast and John Prosser and all these guys, and I stopped doing it because of the lack of interest at this point. The lack of interest. Before, if I told you we were getting 100,000 people watching us, that would have been a conservative number 5, 6, 7 years ago to watch that live event. It was crazy. And all of a sudden, it just plummeted. It wasn't even like a slow decline in numbers. It was just lack of interest. And it wasn't just us. There were other people that did this. And overall, it just kind of declined. Obviously, everybody started covering it, and you know, it opened up to more people to watch the actual stream. So, but either way, the overall interest in these events kind of went down because it's the same event every single year. I haven't seen interest for a product launch, especially in the phone market, since I want to say the iPhone 6. This big, I'm not saying it's as big of a phone. I'm saying as far as mainstream interest from curious people, and I gauged that based on my tweets and people talking about it.
Something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think that's because of the folding phone specifically? Do you think that's the reason?
That is 100%
Samsung. Okay, so they previewed this thing back in November. It got a bunch of press, and I don't know, how did they even communicate that there were? I'm not even sure what the, you know, as we came up to this event, if they even said they were going to talk about it. But
yes, because there's a commercial where the girl in the commercial, that commercial that I sung to you last week, it's been all over TV, and the girl actually uses the folded the Samsung Galaxy Fold in the commercial.
Okay, yeah. So marketing worked.
I don't know if it was I think it was really good marketing, but for me it was, because I know what it was. I asked my wife, I asked my brother. They've seen the commercial. They have no idea. They just think it's a phone. They had no idea it's a foldable phone. So
did you find it odd that they led with the folding phone?
Yes.
Don't you think that should have been the last thing they talked about?
There's a reason for it. I haven't figured out why. I really haven't. And it's not to get the most bang, you know? I don't think that was their reason, because generally you save it at the end and then you unveil this and you get the big pop.
I have a theory, by the way.
And it was very quick, by the way. It wasn't that long that they spent on this foldable phone.
Yeah. Well, at the time, it seemed like it was a pretty good amount of time. And then they went and did the S10 stuff, and you were like, okay, well, there was a lot more spent on that. Obviously, the Fold is a very expensive device, right? Starts at $1,980, whatever. It's roughly double the cost of a high-end, you know, flagship phone these days. I think, obviously, they don't expect to sell a bunch of them, right? Early adopters will buy it. It's not ready. We can talk. We'll get to that. I mean, there's stuff about it that no one should want this phone. It's in its current state. But the interesting thing I sort of realized after the fact was they raised prices on the S10, right?
Yes, they did.
Last year, the S9 started, I think, at $720, and I want to say the S10 Plus was $850. This year, they're selling a $750 device that is dramatically lower specs across the board that they didn't sell before, the S10e. And the S10 starts at, I'm not going to remember, $900, I think. And then the S10 Plus starts at $1,000. I mean, those are significant price increases. And I wonder if they didn't do the other phone first to blunt the criticism over the price hikes.
Because you're starting off with a $1,900 phone, and people are going to justify it.
$1,000, and now you say, look, we've got three phones under $1,000. And you're like, oh, that's reasonable. Hmm. You know?
That's actually a really good analysis of it.
This only occurred to me today. This is not something I...
You know what, though? To kind of set the expectation, if this is 1900, if this is 1980, and the other one is, you know, whatever the price is, it's less, but look, this, you're going in order in pricing. You're coming backwards in pricing. So I guess that's how they justify it.
I don't know how they justify the price increase, honestly. I mean, Samsung last year, remember I complimented their CEO when he had come out and said, look, this stuff is hard. We price phones too expensive. You know, he was very transparent about the issues the company faced. And I thought for sure that meant they're going to lower prices this year. Their prices last year were already significantly lower than the iPhone, right? When you think about $720, $850 versus $1,000 and $1,100 for iPhone XS, they already had a significant advantage. They went in the other direction. They priced their phones, well, they're not quite as bad as Apple's, but they're much closer to Apple's pricing than they were before. That is astonishing to me.
Yeah. To go on the Fold.
Yes.
We're talking about a 7.3-inch Infinity Flex screen, they call it. When open...
That's the folding screen.
A folding screen. And it's a 4.6-inch screen when it's folded. So the display is really small on the front, which, listen, first-gen device. I get it.
You're excusing Samsung. See, I have a huge problem with this.
Okay.
That display on the outside, which is completely separate from the folding display, right? It's a second display. External display, or whatever you want to call it, should look like a phone. You know, what it looks like is a phone we used to have, you know, 10 years ago. It's got bezels that are bigger than those on the first iPhone.
I don't even think it's a bezel. It almost looks like, you know, when you see it now on the Samsung phones, and I think that's what they were duplicating. They have covers. Yeah. That kind of cover the front, it does that. It's like one of those. It's really weird.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a display that's kind of inset into a piece of aluminum or whatever it's made out of. The other thing is, obviously, with the hinge, you know, the thickness of it, when that thing is folded up, it looks like a candy bar phone from the, you know, 1990s or whatever, the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And it's very thick. And I understand why anyone today would look at this device open and say, wow, it'd be so cool to have this unfolding display. However, anyone who's used a smartphone over the past 10 years would find that display unacceptable, the outside display. It's too small.
I wonder if people are going to utilize that outside display. If people that purchase this, the very few, I'm assuming initially, considering the pricing and it's a first-gen device, and I think I'm very interested in this device. I'm interested to see the next version, the Gen 2 and the Gen 3, and how they change this. I mean, obviously, by looking at this, you could see okay, well, the hinge is going to get a lot smaller. It's going to get thinner. The display in the front is going to change, and the whole thing is going to be a display at one point. Obviously, there's reasons why they didn't do it. Most likely, people said it's probably due to battery life or technology. I think it's so they could push out a Gen 2 and a Gen 3, and it has all this stuff.
So I talked about, you said you mentioned you had listened to First Ring Daily. So I had this conversation with Brad, but there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. And one of those things is that Samsung has their entire corporate identity, as far as the smartphone business, wrapped up in this notion of being first. And I really feel like that era has come to an end. It's over. A lot of the stuff they were talking about for these new devices has been available in other phones. Before, my Huawei phone has an in display fingerprint reader. My Huawei phone has two-way wireless charging. I could charge a device with this device. These are features that Samsung in the past would have been first to market with. This display, this folding phone, I try to imagine Apple is working on a folding iPhone. They're going to do the same thing. So the thing unfolds, it looks like an iPad mini or whatever. Great. Can you imagine Apple releasing this device ever?
No, never.
It's inconceivable.
Never.
In fact, the thing that Samsung is releasing today would have been the first working prototype that Apple came up with as a proof of concept internally. And then they would have said 3 to 4 years from now, this thing will be ready, you know? And people criticize Apple, you know, for being late to market, which they absolutely almost always are with new technologies. That's a huge problem with the iPhone for sure. But this is the other extreme. And the problem for Samsung is that many Chinese phone makers, including Huawei, by the way, within a week of today will announce their own folding designs. And I have not seen them, but it would not surprise me in the slightest if at least a few of them are more advanced than what Samsung just showed off, are thinner, have better outside screens, right? Are less expensive, which they absolutely will be, some of them, and that they will get to market more quickly with the refined version that we're really waiting for, which is, let's face it, probably 2 years away.
So what, then why release it now for Samsung, right?
Because they're in a tricky spot, Andrew, right? Samsung and Apple, the two biggest smartphone makers in the world, they both have experienced major year-over-year sales shortages. Their market is collapsing. The top two Chinese phone makers, which are number 2 and 3, in the market, experienced 25-26% sales increases last year. Oppo, which is number 5, I don't remember the exact figure, but it's 8 or 9%, something like that. Those companies are growing. Samsung and Apple are falling. And so, you know, there are short-term things. Raising prices, by the way, is one of those things you can do to kind of shore up your revenues, I guess. But what Samsung needs to be concerned about is their market share. Samsung not being the world's biggest smartphone maker is going to be a huge blow. And I think there's going to be a cascading effect that occurs when that happens, because it is going to happen, where people just start abandoning ship. You know, there are people, I don't think they're as emotional or religious as the Apple fans, who buy Samsung products. And they, 2 years go by, and they're like, I'm going to buy the next thing. I like Samsung, you know. But Samsung's got a lot of problems. You know, they put a lot of crap on their phones. Some of their designs are bizarre. They're always trying to outdo Google and replace things that already exist. They've got their own assistant for some reason. They integrate their stuff with their smart devices in the kitchen, which is kind of weird. You know, they have their own thing that's sort of outside of, well, smart things, you know, outside of a Google Assistant or Amazon Alexa. And I think this is all coming back to bite them in the ass. You know, the thing that Samsung did to Apple, which was copy them outright to get into the market, do so at a lower price, right, to gain market share, and then finally start innovating and doing things beyond what Apple was doing, is exactly what's happening to Samsung right now. But it's Huawei and Xiaomi and other iPhone Chinese-based smartphone makers that are doing it. You know, the phone I just described, for example, the Huawei Mate 20 Pro, is less expensive than an iPhone XS. You know,
but here's the question:
Samsung is.
You know, what's that? Those Chinese OEMs like Huawei and Xiaomi, they don't really have any kind of footprint in the States. Globally, obviously, right. they have market share.
You know, this isn't like we're selling cheap knockoff crap from Asia. This is, they have, like I said, they have moved past the we're copying, right? So like the Huawei phones, for example, blatantly copy the design of the Samsung curved screen. They have the same kind of curved screen. It's just as nice. They've had other technologies, like I said, fingerprint reader, the two-way wireless charging, et cetera, before Samsung, right? So they're not just copying, although there's an element to that. They're not just doing what everyone else is doing. They're doing it faster. They're doing it cheaper, you know? Yeah. And these devices are gorgeous. They're gorgeous. And
I'm curious if it's market dictated.
It's not a Chinese thing. Like they're just beautiful devices.
Okay, so I question if it's market dictation as to the pricing and how they are. You know, when we look at Samsung right now, Samsung, like you said, Samsung was far less expensive than the iPhone. It was essentially an iPhone copy. And, you know, Huawei and Xiaomi and these other OEMs out there, these phone manufacturers that are blowing up in Europe and in Asia, they followed essentially the Samsung model where you copied the better one and then you create your own brand. The problem I have is when you look at the pricing where it's cheaper, yeah, it's cheaper, but if you look at what their highest end, what is the Pro 20, right?
Yep.
Okay.
That's expensive.
That's expensive. Fine. Because I know that the market that they're hitting is less expensive. When they enter the U.S. market in, let's say, in 5 years or whatever, let's just assume that it happens and enter the market. I anticipate that to change. I anticipate that they're going to adapt to what the market is dictating here in the States. And these phones are going to be still $1,600 or $1,300 or whatever it is.
Andrew, listen, 5 years from now, we could be talking about the new generation of smartphone giants from India or from Africa or from wherever. I mean,
whatever it is, the technology changes.
There's always somewhere else. I mean, of course, you know, lots of things can and will change. But, you know, it's bizarre to me. Like, we went to China collectively as a country, you know, all of the big companies with consumer electronics to build our products there. China was so inexpensive that despite the distances involved with shipping and everything, it was still cheaper to design stuff here, send the plans over there, have them build the machines and make sure they all work correctly, build the things for us, and then ship them across the world again. I mean, obviously that's going to change. But in doing that, we've given the Chinese the expertise, or not, maybe not given them is not the right term. They've certainly learned it on their own, but they've developed the expertise to build this stuff themselves. It's a capability we don't have here in the United States. Yeah.
Also, something that they have over there, which we don't, is the ability to kind of understand and predict with perceptions and all this stuff. They can predict what the U.S. market's going to look like. The big problem that we have had, and you can see this with many of our tech companies, is assuming what the Chinese market's going to look like in 5 years. We don't know. And a lot of these companies, you look at mobile streaming, right? Streaming companies have a very difficult time penetrating that market in all of Asia, essentially.
So I'm just looking this up because I'm kind of curious about this. But what's the population of the United States today, you think?
350 million? Let's say 350.
The population of China right now is over 1.4 billion.
Yeah. Right?
What this means is a smartphone maker can succeed without the United States, right? They cannot succeed, not at the highest level, without China. China is the biggest market in the world. Now, granted, a huge chunk of China is really poor, and no one, you know, those people are not buying smartphones. But that's still an opportunity, and the market of people who can afford smartphones is still bigger than that of the United States. And so, it's a super important market.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of xenophobia. There's a lot of fear. Governmental connections.
So we heard that with Samsung and Korean phones also. You know, we saw this.
It's different, and people fare different, and you know, and then of course there's the protectionism element. We all have that feeling. I mean, us over them. I mean, you know, we do that. I do that with my neighbors. I mean, you know, it's just the way people are. You know, whatever. But anyway. China's coming. There's no stopping it. I mean, look, we can protect it for a little while.
But see, I don't think Apple is to fear when they enter the U.S. market. I don't think it's going to impact Apple. I think it's going to impact Samsung. And
I think Samsung is the most vulnerable company. Because you know, Samsung's entire business is smartphones, to be clear, is very much modeled after Apple's. But Samsung doesn't have the religious, faithful audience that Apple does. Samsung hasn't built an ecosystem that is as high quality and as enduring as what Apple has done. They've tried. They're trying. You know, and I give them credit for this. I back when Nokia was getting into Windows phones, one of the best things that they did for fans of that platform was they had great apps that didn't otherwise exist on the platform. They had great services. They had great hardware peripherals. They offered the whole meal deal, you know. When you walk into an Apple store today, it's like for a person who is a fan of that stuff, it's better than Disney World, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, there's like cases and earbuds and there's all, you know, like, oh, they have computers and, you know, it's like all this stuff and it's like,
and then
it's
when you go home, you have apps, Paul. You have
when you go
apps
home, you have a credit card bill.
Yeah. But, you bought $40 worth of stupid apps and planners.
Yeah.
Just to go back to the pricing. So this is the comparison. I have it on Therat.com, obviously. Obviously the S10e didn't exist, and that starts at $750. It didn't exist for the 9 lineup, so that doesn't count. But the S10 is starting at $900. S9 was $720. $720 to $900.
That's a $180 jump. That's incredible.
Well, how about this? The S10 Plus is starting at $1,000. S9 Plus, $830.
Yeah. So $1,000 versus $170 in that case. So these are approximately 20% price jumps off the top of my head. That's roughly the price jump that Apple performed last year with the iPhones. For Samsung to have publicly expressed disappointment in sales and to have attributed it to prices that were too high, and then to raise prices 20% the next year, even the cheapo phone, which is not as well specced as the other phones, right? The camera's not as good, et cetera.
Yeah.
Is more expensive than the normal 9.
Listen, I get it. And there are apologists and there are defenders of pricing. And we did the same with Apple too. It's astronomical. Yeah. Yes, now the RAM, the memory is faster and it starts at 128 gigs instead of 64.
Of course, stuff gets better. That is inexcusable.
It has a micro SD slot. Nobody needs 128 built in. Nobody needs it. It has a micro SD.
Okay, fair enough. I don't understand who would be an apologist for this because there's no logical.
Oh, I hear it, Paul.
Defense of it. No, but there really isn't, right? There's no evidence. You got to understand too. The other thing no one's really talking about here. Samsung is the biggest smartphone maker in the world. You know, they're also one of the biggest semiconductor and display makers in the world. They get all the parts that go in this thing from themselves in many cases. And even when it's not something that they source internally, they still get the cheapest possible price you can get because of volume.
Yeah.
You know, there's no excuse for those prices to have gone up like that.
Yeah. It's brutal. It's crazy. It is crazy to jump year over year like that. I do want to kind of get back to, the devices.
Yes.
So they have three devices here. Obviously they have the E, the regular, and then the Plus. We kind of went down the list of specs on each. They added a, they did spend some time on the camera. And I'm curious to see what real world testing looks like for these cameras.
Yes.
And how it does with the, you know, compared to the iPhone and the Pixel. Because this could possibly beat them out. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't, my gut feeling is it's not going to, right? I didn't expect Samsung to come out and say beat the Pixel or beat the Huawei phones, because these are some of the best smartphone cameras in the world. I do expect them to be competitive, and it looks like maybe they'll be in there. What that means is you deliver something akin to what you get on an iPhone, or, you know, it probably won't be as good in low light. It may not have all of the automatic AI modes that you see on the Huawei, whatever. But some of the pictures they showed on stage were not that good looking. You know, they put up a panorama one time and it was like, gee, this is all washed out. It's like,
I'm surprised they spent so much time on the, on the ultra wide mode. And I made a joke, and Mary Jo Foley sent me a picture of a couple of beers on the table. And I said, how often are you going to need the ultra wide shot?
No, but that's, look, that's just, you could list out any number of things in the camera that are just like that. How many times do you need portrait mode? How many times do you need night mode? How many times do you need whatever? Like, this is all, you know, these are just capabilities.
Well, portrait mode worked. I would take it a lot more. I would use it a lot more if it actually worked exactly, you know, how they display it.
And so, right. So I would say for most people, it's certainly true for me. I'm not a professional photographer, but I love photography. I've been taking pictures my whole life. I just want it to work. You know, what I want is to take the thing up, take a picture and have it be the best possible picture that can be taken. I don't want to screw with modes. I don't want to think, okay, look, this is a, you know, a landscape. Maybe I should put it in ultra wide mode. You know, it should do those things for me automatically. You know, a lot of phones, the Huawei is a good example. The Pixel gets into this a little bit too. Once you get past the default, you know, I'm taking a picture mode, there's all these pro modes and special modes and, you know, food mode and whatever it is. And it's like, I don't want to think of that, you know? And so we'll see. The Samsung phone UI, as I recall, it wasn't completely terrible. We talked recently about what they tried to do last year with regards to low light photography and why I thought it was not particularly well done, but I understood why they did it. And we'll see. I will say, if you know, DxO Mark or whatever rates this, I'm very interested to see the ratings on the camera. And who knows, that could change my mind on this phone for sure. I will say too that in watching the event, I was like, they're really spending a lot of time on the photography. This is the thing I'm absolutely interested in waiting for, and I was waiting to see. Here's the score we got on DxO Mark or something like, you know, like Google did not last year, but the year before. They actually submitted their Pixel 2 at the time to those guys early and got the highest ever score, remember?
Yeah.
I was thinking if Samsung's phone is that good, they will have done that. And they didn't, you know, and that kind of makes me think.
Yeah, I do think that they rely. I mean, listen, I have an S9 Plus. I could take beautiful, beautiful photos with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely stunning photos. I still prefer the iPhone, X or the XS, 10S, 10. I keep calling it an X. You know, it shouldn't be a 10. There's no reason why that thing should be called a 10 at this point. It's an X. Can we just change the branding? The 10 and the 10S. You know, when I use that, it just feels easier. You know, I've described it to, you gotta hold this a little bit more gentle than the iPhone. If I just pick it up and shoot it, I will get a better picture with the iPhone. I'm telling you that this is, I've had a Samsung since the S5, and I've had an iPhone for 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is.
Right.
I use these phones every day, the same amount of time. And I have to tell you, can you get a better picture on the Samsung? Yes, you can, but you're going to have to.
Yeah. But day in, day out. The iPhone. That's the thing about the iPhone. It kind of just works. I only feel let down by the iPhone in those low light conditions, but that's true of most phones. Like the Samsung would blow those up. You know, the Pixel gets them right. The Pixel still does it better. That's one place the Huawei doesn't do as well. It's okay. You know, there's a bit of a night sight kind of effect or whatever, but it's not quite exactly. It's not nearly as good as the Pixel.
Hey, what did you think of those earbuds? what are they calling their AirPod copies? Yeah,
Galaxy Buds.
Yeah, the Galaxy Buds.
So these are products. This is a product that wouldn't exist, right? Except for the AirPod. And you know, Samsung. Here we are, 12 years later, and they're still not afraid to shamelessly rip off Apple. That UI where you put them on the thing and it
exactly the same.
Oh my! Are you? Come on.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. That is inexcusable.
Wild.
Surely there is an Android native way to display that pop up. That thing looks exactly like the iPhone one, and that is, or the AirPod one, whatever. That is not cool. That's gross. I can't believe they're doing that now.
Yeah. So
that's
I'm curious.
It's outrageous.
I'm curious to see how this does in quality comparison. As far as overall audio quality goes, because so these are AKG, because obviously AKG, well-known audio brand for microphones, headphones, audio equipment. They start about $129. You can charge these wirelessly, even even with the new S10 line through reverse charging.
Yep, I could charge them on my Huawei.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting, right? You could do that. Yeah. So it comes with enhanced ambient sound. It lets you hear your surroundings while you have your earbuds in also. So this may be better quality earbuds. And the only thing I'm hoping for is that, you know, this may be steps up to Apple game, because I've used those earbuds. They're okay. They're okay. Yeah. They're not great. Yeah. So
the people love them, right? And people I love think them. When you find a person who owns them, and it's not hard, they're everywhere. You say, what do you think of the headphones? They're like, I love them.
Yeah.
What's the audio quality like? It's okay.
I know, honestly, Paul, I don't know. And I'm not crapping them. I actually think that they're very useful. And I was one of these people. I was
I'm not making fun of them, but
I'll tell you
this is a universal thing.
Yeah.
Their owners love them, but the audio quality is okay.
Yeah.
You know, so we know they're coming up with a second gen. I'm sure audio quality will be improved. And there's other changes as well.
What's the battery life on them? Do you know?
I don't know. No, I don't know.
These are 6 hours of Bluetooth streaming and 5 hours of call.
Okay.
So I don't know how that does compare to the AirPods.
I don't know. Yeah. My daughter has these things. She loves them. I don't think she's an audiophile. You know,
there are two things that amaze me and I didn't expect with the AirPods. And I kind of take back. AirPods are 6 hours of battery, 7 in the case. That was the thank you for that, John.
7 in the case?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So you could have 7 hours of battery in the case. So like you pop them in and you charge, right? That's what I'm assuming you mean.
I don't know.
Because the battery on the AirPods, don't they charge in the case?
Yeah, they do. But what is 7 hours of battery life? You mean in other words, you leave them in the.
The case has 7 hours of charging ability.
I'm sorry. I got you. So the case, right. Okay. Yeah.
Case. Yes. Here's so this is an observation that I've come to, you know, experienced. I did not know how in your ear those things are. Like, they stay. They're balanced. Like, you could run and those things don't fall out, which I'm blown away by, because all I could think of was these idiots are running to the train in Midtown Manhattan to get there. You're bumping into people and people are going to be dropping these things.
Flying around like toothpicks.
Nothing. Those things are locked in.
It's particularly interesting because we have about a decade of experience with Apple's various in-ear headphones, which are always terrible, right? Because they're hard plastic and they probably are going to hurt your ears depending on how your ears are shaped, right? You can't make an AirPod thing unless you have tips that are good for everybody, right? It's impossible. Yeah. And so for some reason, I don't know, you know, I don't own them. I don't use them, but you don't really hear a lot of stories. You think you would. About people losing those things or whatever.
Yeah, it's really impressive. I do have a lot more to talk about, obviously, here today. I do want to talk about that, and I do want to kind of talk about Apple and the SDK that they've sent out to developers for iOS apps on the Mac. I do want to talk about that.
A whole lot more. They've not actually. Yeah. I don't think they've actually.
They're sending it out. I apologize. Let me change it. Oh, they're sending it out. Yeah. But before we continue, I want to talk about our new sponsor, and this is something I know a lot about. Paul, I don't know if you know this, but I'm really into keeping my hair. Did you know this? Do you know that I'm kind of involved?
I know that hair doesn't just happen on its own.
Doesn't just happen. It takes a lot of a lot of work to maintain this. And if you subscribe to the GFK Network for a long time in the show, you know that we have a show called The Bald Truth, and one of my business partners is Spencer Corbin, the host of The Bald Truth. So I'm very involved in helping people maintain their hair and talking about maintaining your hair. And I do want to welcome Keeps to the show, which I'm very excited about. Listen, losing your hair sucks. 2/3 of guys will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. I'm 35, and I noticed it was happening. But I was able to quickly, start treating that. Keeps is the easiest and most affordable way to keep your hair you have. Getting started with Keeps is super easy. You sign up. It takes less than 5 minutes. And I went through the process. And I was told that it takes like 5 minutes to do. I'm like, 5 minutes to go through this process? I was blown away how fast it was. You just answer a couple questions and you snap a couple pictures of your hair, which is amazing. A licensed physician will review your information online and recommend the right treatment for you. Then your orders ship right to your door every 3 months. You get a 3-month supply right to your door. You don't have to go to the pharmacy. You don't have to go and pick it up somewhere. It's right there. These FDA approved products used to cost a lot. But now, thanks to Keeps, they're finally inexpensive and easy to get. Keeps is only $10 to $35 a month, which is great. Now you can get your first month for free. It's one hell of a deal. Guys, I highly recommend trying this out. If you want to keep your hair, if it's affecting you, if you're starting to see some sort of hair loss, they supply you with the two only FDA-approved treatments for hair loss. There's only two treatments you could do, and they supply it. Forget about those ointments and those 1990s infomercials that you see. There's only two FDA products that could help you with this, and Keeps supplies you with it. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/Andrew. Next week, I'm going to talk about my experience with it a little bit more, signing up to Keeps and using it. I've been a longtime advocate for doing something like this. You know, we see all these product stuff. Why, if you're a guy and you're losing it, what's wrong with just saying, you know what, I'm going to take something. I'm going to get some sort of medication to help prevent it from falling out. I guarantee if most people knew about this, they would be very willing to try it out. Keeps.com/Andrew. You get your first month of treatment for free. This is coming from a hair guy. I'm just letting you know. A super hair guy. Paul knows. Paul, how many times have we spoken about hair and what I do?
How many times have we not spoken about hair?
Guys, yeah. Keeps.com/Andrew. Welcome them to the show. I'm very excited. And you'll be blown away on how easy the process was. I was shocked. I'm not going to talk about the medication right now, but when I initially wanted to get treatment for this, the hoops I had to jump through to go to doctors that even understood this or knew the medication or knew that there were two FDA-approved products, Keeps makes it super easy, and they're in communication with you. Immediately, I got a response back, and it was great. Keeps.com/Andrew. Start your first month of treatment for free when you go to keeps.com/Andrew. Paul. Let's do our own hair show. Forget about Spencer and the Bald Truth. It's Andrew and Paul now.
You could solve my own balding problems. That'd be great.
Are you balding?
Yeah, I got a little patch in the back.
Well, listen, maybe I could get like a Keeps package sent to you.
You should, if you could.
Would you want it? Would you do it?
Sure.
Okay.
Of course.
I'll take care of that. Don't worry about it. Anything to save that beautiful.
It's like
salt
Samsung,
and pepper hair,
you know, or Samson with his hair. You know.
I do want to talk about the Apple stuff really quickly. This is interesting that it's happening and it's a reality. But how much of a game changer do you think this possibly is for iOS apps to be on the Mac platform? I'm not saying people are going to jump ship, you know, of being a lifelong, you know, PC user, a Windows user. But this kind of makes the transition easy. This makes it very easy.
Obviously Microsoft, you know, as is so often the case, you know, they kind of did this first, but what they did was they built in a new mobile platform that had no apps. Stupid. You know, you can see the success of what Google has done on Chrome OS by bringing Android apps in the Play Store there. And Apple appears to be mimicking that, but they're doing it in Apple fashion, late, slowly, you know, incrementally. But they'll get it right. You and I have talked about it's three or four apps that are available now in the current version of Mac OS, the news app in particular. And it works fine. You know, it's nice.
Yeah.
But it's a big deal for the Mac because they just don't have the native apps platform that, you know, the body of apps that we have, say, on Windows. And so this solves a problem. And it also could potentially improve Mac sales because now you can go to the Mac and use familiar apps, you know. One thing I'll just say, kind of on a personal level, when Google announced that they were killing Google Inbox last September, I looked at Gmail and I said, I can't use this. And so I spent the past several months investigating email clients. I'm going to use Outlook Mobile on my phone, which is the Microsoft product, but I'm going to use this thing called Postbox on the Windows PC and on Mac as well, actually. It's just some native client, whatever it is, who cares? You know what I'd like to use on my PC is Outlook Mobile, right? Because that app exists on Android tablets. It exists on iPads, and it's a great, simple email app, right?
So,
but that's not available to me on Windows. What's that?
Postbox looks just like Apple's native mail app. On
yeah,
the
it,
Mac,
it's very.
On the
it Mac. Does have an Apple UI. Yeah. Some people have complained about that. I think it's fine. I like it, but I this is something I would benefit. I don't use a Mac, right? A Mac is not obviously my primary platform, but having iOS apps on that platform, whatever it is, or having Android apps is huge. It's huge. And I think there are so, you know, these days, so many people are more familiar with those apps or more comfortable with those apps. It makes the acceptance of that other platform much easier. And I really think in Apple's case, this is going to have a nice impact on the Mac.
Absolutely. And I could see it already at whatever launch event that they do. Tim Cook standing there and saying, listen, you don't have to buy new apps when you come to the Mac platform. Your apps on your phone and on your tablet also work on your Mac, and it'll be like a QVC commercial. We look at the savings you have. This is up to $2,000. I'm telling you right now, they're going to say the average iPhone or iPad user has spent, they're going to come up with some fakakta number that's really high. They're going to say $250 in applications over the last 24 months, but now all of this is free on the Mac platform. So why would you go and buy Outlook if you already have this? Why would you go and buy this application? And they're going to do this whole comparison. You know what? People are going to say, yeah, this is great. This is great. And I agree. I think this is great. There's many applications that I use on my phone daily that I would love to have on my Mac. Now, what applications are going to support? I don't know. That's where the question is. What apps are they going to bring in?
Well, I mean, eventually it's going to be any app that wants to do it, right? So I think from the developer's perspective, they're probably going to have to check a box and they're, you know, however they submit their apps to Apple, it says, yeah, I want this to be on the Mac, you know. And the best apps will take a few, app developers will take a few steps to make those things more friendly on the Mac, right? Keyboard shortcuts maybe or whatever. I'm sure there'll be some set of requirements they have to adhere to. But this is really interesting. I mean, we collectively as a people, as users of these devices, have changed the way that we do things. Not everybody, but most people. So, you know, there are things I used to do on the computer that I never do on the computer anymore. I just do on mobile, you know. I used to carry, like we talk about this all the time, you spend a lot of time with MP3 files, you carry around your collection. When you go on a trip, you put it all on your laptop, you know. I don't listen to music on my computer ever, like ever. But even if it was the smartphone version, you could picture like a little skinny window over in the corner and you wanted to listen to music on your computer and your collection's up in Spotify or in, you know, whatever the app, Apple Music, whatever, who cares? That's how you get that stuff on that device, right? I think you and I have complained about Apple still has iTunes, but they've never brought Apple Music as a standalone app or to the Mac. Well, they won't have to if they have this. This is how you get Apple Music on the Mac. Why maintain different code bases, right? This is good for that as well, for developers. You know, it's smart.
I'm just really curious where, on the developer side, you know, which applications would be beneficial on the Mac that we don't have an option for currently. Like right now, I'll give an example. I do a lot of Instagram stuff for all the brands that we have. I use an app called Flume, FLUME. And I bought this app. It was $9 and I'm able to use Instagram like I would on my phone.
But Instagram is an example of an app that doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist. But I don't know if they would even want to bring it to the Mac. That's the question. That's what that, like Snapchat, for example. Snapchat would not, and that's one of the popular applications when you look at, you know, apps that people use. Would that app, would they even consider bringing it to
the
Mac?
I mean, you know, it's just additional usage. It's, by the way, the other way to look at it is, no matter what the app is, Instagram, Snap, whatever, you've got users and those users are on an iPhone and you put that thing out on the Mac and they use a Mac, that keeps them on your app, right? Because now you're everywhere they are and that's beneficial for those people too. Like this, it's just smart business, you know? It's Apple. They're going to do this the right way. That's the thing. They're going to do it slowly. They're Apple, right? But they will do it the right way. And so, you know, this was rumored for a long time. And so last year, it must have been WWC last year. You know, Craig Federighi kind of stood up and said, you know, I get asked all the time, are you bringing iOS apps to the Mac or I think the way he said it was combining iOS and the Mac and was like, no. And the thing slammed down, you know, and that kind of classic keynote special effect Well, the answer is yes, of course. Yeah. Even when he said it, I was like, that's good. Of course you are. You know, you bring the best of iOS to the Mac. It's smart. The Mac becomes a superset of iOS. If they're really smart and they've shown great pushback to this, they'll start adding touch to their devices too. But with baby steps, you know, it's Apple.
Well, they do have a new display coming out, right? The 15-inch model is now going to be a 16-inch model.
Of the MacBook Pro,
The MacBook Pro, which kind of makes sense because you got the tremendous bezel. And to be honest, if that 13-inch becomes a 14-inch model, that's the one to get, right? That's the one.
I love 14-inch devices. I always feel a little constrained on a 13-inch laptop. And, you know, HP, for example, they have that 1030, 1040 series in the Elite Book. And there's nothing wrong with the Elite Book 1030. It's a great, great laptop. But they shipped a 14-inch version, and I was like, oh, it's perfect. It's like the Goldilocks, you know, of laptops. It's perfect.
But it's difficult to do for the form factor with bezels. Right now, since we're in this bezel-less world, man, bezels have come back, huh? It was like 2 years we didn't talk about bezels. now it's back.
A lot of the push that we've seen, and this started with the Dell XPS, is you've got a 13.3 is the kind of classic laptop style, a laptop size. And so what they've started doing, starting with Dell, was, well, we'll reduce the bezels down as small as possible, and now we can make the computer smaller. To which I would say, no. Leave it the size it is. Yeah. Make the display 14 inches, right?
Because
one of the benefits of that size device is you've got a full-size keyboard. There's no compromises on that kind of stuff.
Well, you know who would benefit from a smaller device? Apple would for that 15-inch model. The MacBook Pro 15 is very big, it's daunting for people. When I'm sitting at a bar and I'm trying to get some work done, it's almost like I feel embarrassed. It's the equivalent to people. It's the equivalent of someone whipped out a 17-inch laptop now to us.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You could never use that on a typical airline seat. You know, I bought one and sent it back for that very reason. I mean, it was really the 15-inch too big. The 15 is too big.
Yeah.
Too big.
Yeah, it's unnecessary big. Is there anything that I missed in our discussion, Paul? I know you got to go at 2:00.
No, I mean, obviously the Samsungs, I think we've kind of covered most of it. They raised prices. Four models. Remember, there's a 5G. We didn't really talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Let's go into that.
I think the only thing I would say about that real quickly is that it has really hammered home the fact that 5G is not happening in any major way this year. And it is going to be a weird historical footnote that Samsung 1 year had to ship one version of its phone with a 5G chip set. And it's crazy. Part of the problem there is that the current generation 5G chipsets are actually separate from the chipsets for 4G, LTE, 3G, et cetera. So you actually have to put both in your phone. That makes it very difficult. So the next gen versions, including the one from Qualcomm that they just announced this past week, the X55, will have all of that stuff on a single piece of silicon. But we're not going to see those phones till next year. So a year from now, we'll be talking about how all of Samsung's S11s are now 5G compatible. Yeah.
I wonder if this was some sort of deal with the OEMs. I'm sorry, not the carriers, that they had to have a 5G phone for this lineup.
I don't know. I mean, obviously it's a competitive advantage in the short run if you like they're partnering with Verizon, right? So Verizon and AT&T in the US will be the fastest to roll out 5G, but it's still not going to go very fast. And so I may write about this, but you know, one of the big stories about broadband or cellular broadband is that your connectivity varies wildly depending on where you are. It literally goes from zero to something really, really fast, depending on where you are. And 5G is going to be the same thing, especially for the short term. And so when Qualcomm and these other companies, Huawei, whatever, talks about like instant access to online movies and everything. Yeah, I mean, if you're standing in the middle of New York City and you get the perfect cell tower signal, maybe, but it's going to be years. And in some places,
never.
You know, some decades, places. I mean, never. Yeah. You know. Yeah, it's going to take a while. So
I know the argument, and I'll say this quickly. I had spoken to someone at AT&T. He's a pretty high up that lives down the block from me. And we were talking about this. He actually listens to the show. I do want to say, you may know him, actually. You may actually know this guy. He comments and stuff. He's a longtime Throt fan too. I was talking to him, and he said that the goal with 5G is not necessarily, because I was asking him, I'm like, what's the speed comparison going to be? Because I'm standing here in Bayside in Queens. I'm not even in Manhattan, and I'm getting 120 megabits by 80. You know, something obscene. Average, I get about 89 to 90 on average up and down. So that's crazy fast speeds.
Yeah.
Better than most people have in their home. And I said to him, I'm like, how much better are you going to, is 5G going to be? He said, it's not about it being quicker. It's about access and range for 5G. Yeah.
Latency. So there's a lot to
latency.
It.
Yeah. That's what it's about. So it's going to be more less latency and it's going to be more coverage. So you're going to have to install less towers because they're going to overlap better. And it's a financially, a safer bet for the carriers to implement. And he had a whole theory about how everybody, it's just going to be 5G. No more cable lines coming into your house. You're just going to have 5G. And that's the future.
Maybe.
The switch. Yeah, sure. Maybe. Yeah, maybe if they all do it, you know, if they, you know, don't cap us and throttle us. But the future of 5G is not necessarily having the speed, but having the long range coverage. Right. That's what it is. Listen, for me, it doesn't matter to have 5G for me because I got 90 megabits up and down with 4G. I don't need a faster speed right now.
Yeah, right. For the types of things we're doing on phones today, what's the big deal? I mean, I'm getting ready to go on a trip. I just downloaded a bunch of music to one of my phones. I did it over Wi-Fi, obviously. I'm not ridiculous, but it's a pretty big chunk of stuff. But, 20, 30 minutes later, it's done. Like, what's the, whatever. Like, I don't really, and don't get me wrong. I'm not like, Bill Gates supposedly said 640K is enough for everybody. I don't mean it like that. But for the types of things we're doing on phones today, unless you're in the boondocks or whatever.
Yeah,
I think a lot of the connectivity choices that we have today are great. Faster is always better. I'll take it. I hope it happens. But
listen, and the technology that they're using, they're going to be able to overlap. They're going to have better coverage.
It's just not
really
going to happen this year.
No, 100% not this year. Listen, Verizon put out that press release. Remember that saying, no more wires in your house. They're going to have homes are going to be now 5G homes.
How many asterisks did they have to use?
Do you remember with the 4G homes? Do you remember that? We covered that, Paul. How many years ago that they said, every home, forget about Fios's future. It's not Verizon's future in the home. It's not Fios. It's about 4G in the home where you just have one box and that's your router and it's your internet and that's everything.
Fios in a box.
What happened? Fios in a box.
Wish I could have Fios.
What happened? Well, 5G was supposed to be the same thing, and they put out a press release. They said they're doing it. I understand. It is so hard to build infrastructure, and it's so expensive.
Fios is very expensive. Yeah, so what happens is they found out that when it comes to laying infrastructure, it's much, much cheaper to do wireless than it is to do wired.
Yeah, because maintenance. It's not about the initial breaking the ground. It's more about the maintenance of these lines.
Yeah.
We saw what AT&T's ridiculous cost was for copper, the maintenance of copper lines a couple of years ago we were talking about. I mean, it's astronomical to maintain copper lines. So when they went to fiber, when Verizon went to fiber, the goal was, it's really expensive to lay it down, but the maintenance is going to be a whole lot less. I don't think that worked. And it didn't work out as they planned because the maintenance is still a lot because you got to actually cover physical lines. I do have Fios, and I have gigabit Fios here. Yeah. Paul, what do you have there in Pennsylvania?
Not gigabit Fios. I have.
Yeah. Who told you to leave? Who told you to go to Pennsylvania?
Jeez. All right.
All right, guys. That's it for this week. If you're watching this live, you're watching it on YouTube and on Twitch. I'm gonna stay around, and I'm gonna do a bonus show for you guys because Paul has to go and work, unfortunately. I know Paul would like nothing more to hang out and chat some more, but he has to go and work. You can subscribe to the podcast.
I'd rather talk to you than talk to the people I'm going to be talking to.
I know. I'm a lot more fun. It's a lot more fun to talk to me. You can go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe everywhere the podcast is available. Also, if you're watching here on YouTube, hit that subscribe button right on the video. You can see if you hover over that little play button, you can hit the subscribe button and subscribe to the show. It's a huge help, and it lets you know whenever we're live. Thanks to our sponsors today, Keeps. And, of course, Rocket Loan, thank you to them. And Therot.com for all things Paul. Go there. You could join for Therot Premium. Great articles, great blog posts. I actually have a question for you that I'll talk to you about off air about Therot Premium.
Okay.
I'll tell you off the air. Nothing bad. It's not like screw your website, Paul. No, nothing bad. I actually had a question about something. So I'll do that. And that's it for this week, guys. See you later. Bye, Paul.
Bye.